is a revolution taking place in the medical world today in terms of how people are preparing for surgery. It's being led in part by our guest today, Peggy Huddleston. Peggy is the author of a groundbreaking new book, Prepare for Surgery, Heal Faster. In the foreword to this book, the distinguished surgeon and author, Dr. Christiane Northrup, writes, "The only way to take full advantage of the healing through surgery is by acknowledging an ingredient that has been missing for far too long, the innate wisdom of the patient. Imagine what would be possible if every patient openly and wholeheartedly embraced his or her part in the healing process, with the full cooperation and acknowledgement of their surgeon and anesthesiologist." That is the direction in which Peggy Huddleston so skillfully points us, whether we participate as patients or surgeons. When we combine the healing power of the human spirit with the curing technology of surgery, we not only have the best of both worlds, we are also setting the stage for the miraculous to become commonplace. Stay with us for the next hour as Peggy talks about the most effective mind-body techniques that help you prepare for surgery so you will heal faster with much less pain. Peggy is a graduate of Harvard Divinity School, a practicing psychotherapist, and is doing clinical research in the ways emotions and the human spirit enhance healing. Above all, she is a healer. My name is Patricia Ellsberg. I'll be your host today. Welcome to New Dimensions. Peggy, you're not a medical doctor, so how did you come to write this book about preparing for surgery?
Patricia, for years I've taught courses in what people can do with their emotions and attitudes to speed their physical healing process. In a class of about 50 people that I'd be teaching in New York and Paris or Amsterdam or London, there'd always be someone who would raise their hand and say, "I'm having surgery next week. I'm giving my kidney to my sister. Is there anything I can do to lessen my pain after surgery? And can I in any way lessen this awful anxiety I had before surgery?" So I came up with 5 steps they could use in preparing for surgery. And the person would come back to me and say, "I felt so peaceful before surgery. I felt more peaceful than I've ever felt in my entire life. As I lay on the gurney outside the operating room, I thought to myself, I don't think I would." And they said, "I healed faster after surgery." And I thought that was just a few exceptional patients. But more and more people came back saying the same thing, having used these 5 mind-body techniques. And they said, "You've got to put this in a book." And I thought, well, I'm sure this book already exists. And I found that it didn't. And when I began to look up medical research at Harvard Medical School, I found beautiful double-blind controlled studies documenting each of the 5 steps they were using in preparing for surgery. And so that's how I came to write the book. I think if I'd been a doctor, say trained in medical school 20 years ago, I would have been trained this was impossible, because we thought when patients were unconscious with anesthesia during surgery, they couldn't hear. New research shows they're highly suggestible, and there are many things you can do that in that suggestibility can speed their healing and lessen their use of pain medication after surgery.
It's almost probably a help that you weren't trained in the traditional medical model as it has been anyway in the past. How did you evolve these steps? Did you find them all put together, or did you put them together yourself? Or?
They came to me intuitively, putting these 5 steps together in the sequence that I'll be glad to explain to your listeners so they can use them too.
Yeah, let's run through the steps. What's the first one?
Well, the first step is showing a patient before surgery, whether they have 2 weeks before surgery, a month, or just 2 days, what they can do to get deeply relaxed. There's a relaxation healing tape that comes with the book, and I recommend that people listen to it probably twice a day. And it first gets them deeply relaxed, because I find before surgery, people are frightened. They feel very vulnerable, and I find a very beautiful thing happens out of that vulnerability and fear, that they really go from their personality, and often their defenses don't work very well, and they really fall into their soul, and they connect with a profound peace that connects them with a love that many people have only experienced in glimpses. And as they listen to the tape, they can anchor to that peace, and as they anchor to it in that deep state of relaxation, the tape asks them to visualize their ideal surgical outcome. So as they begin to do that, they're shifting themselves from the fight-or-flight response, if they were terrified before surgery, instead into feeling a profound peace that becomes deeper with each day as they approach surgery. So the first step is one of deep, deep, profound relaxation, but they tumble into a peace. And that peace is what speeds their healing after surgery. And many people say it changes their lives because they've awakened to that peace, and they then use it for the rest of their lives once they're healed.
So in a way, the crisis of facing surgery and the fear and the terror allows for an opening to another level of experience.
Exactly. And then what can happen is, as a person's getting deeply relaxed, and on the tape we ask them to think of a person or a pet who's easy to love, and as they just center in their heart and feel their love for that person and or that pet's love for them, the flow opens up in their heart. But we know from research at the Heart Math Institute in Boulder Creek, California, that just 20 minutes of being heart-centered actually increases the levels of salivary IgA. That's an antibody that's in our saliva. It's our first defense against flus and colds. And people with high levels of it don't get colds and flus, and people with low levels do. So what's amazing is just 20 minutes of being deeply relaxed greatly enhances the immune system. And there's something else in our immune system. Our immune system is coordinated by our T cells. They come from our thymus gland that's nestled in between, right next to our heart. And these T cells coordinate and run our whole immune system. When we're stressed, our T cell counts get lower. You know, people with AIDS are always saying, what's the T cell count? And it gets lower and lower the more the immune system is compromised. And a very interesting study was done by Dr. Janice Culcut Glazier and her husband, Ronald Glazier, psychologist at Ohio State University College of Medicine. They took medical students, and when they were not tense before exams, they measured their T-cell count, and they taught them how to use a relaxation tape to get deeply peaceful and relax. Then they waited till these students were in the middle of exams, all the crunch and pressure of exams. They measured their T-cell count. They found, again, it had dropped because of the stress. And then they gave the students the tape to listen to, and in just 20 minutes of relaxation, the T-cell count dramatically increased. So patients, in learning to get deeply relaxed before surgery, are actually creating the biochemistry of healing. So not only do they feel better before surgery, the patient who's using it is profoundly peaceful compared to the patient who's getting more and more of a nervous wreck as surgery approaches. This patient's getting calmer and calmer as surgery's approaching, and they listen to the tape as they lie on the gurney outside the operating room, and they become literally blissful.
So in a way, the preparation is actually making them more capable of healing. It's triggering aspects of their hormonal system and their endocrine system and their immune system so that they can actually heal faster. It's not just being more relaxed. It's actually triggering the processes that will allow them to heal faster.
Exactly. You're right. Because if they had been afraid, when we're afraid, there's a cascade of 30 hormones and neurotransmitters that our body just admits. And all of those are counterproductive before, during, and after surgery for the healing process. So you're right. It's correct. It's creating healing.
It's fascinating. So it's not just kind of like a faith healing, and you could dismiss that as, well, it's just psychological. But this mind-body connection really shows how intimately close the relationship is between the mind, the state of mind, and the capacity to heal.
Exactly. We now, with wonderful research, we understand the physiology and how profound relaxation enormously changes our physiology and can either dramatically enhance healing, whereas fear dramatically works against it.
I can see now why it's so powerful. Now, we've gone through the first step, and have we gone through the second step? Where are we on the five-step program?
Well, the second step is showing a person how to turn their worries and fears into healing imagery. And, for example, I was working with a man recently who was waiting for a heart transplant at Mass General Hospital. And he had been in the hospital for 2 months because he was so sick he couldn't be out of the hospital, and you never know when they'll find a heart. Unfortunately, someone usually has to die to receive a transplant. The last 3 days, he had been unable to sleep. The only way they could get the man to sleep was to knock him out with morphine. And as we came in and worked with him, we asked him, what are you thinking about your surgery. He said, well, I'm either going to die or they're going to crack open my chest and rip out my heart. Well, no wonder the man couldn't sleep. He had two images, both of which were terrible, that had to do with his surgery. And so we wanted to turn those into healing imagery. And we asked him, couldn't you see that your new heart is going to give you a new life? And he said, and he honestly said, we were amazed he said it, I never thought of it that way. And then we said, how do you feel about your heart now? And he said, I am so mad at my heart. I'm enraged that it's let me down, that I've had to get to this point that I need a heart transplant. So he was pumping rage out to his heart throughout the day. And we said, couldn't you thank it because it's gotten you this far? And he said, I never thought of it that way. So whatever worry a person has about their healing, we asked them to turn that into healing imagery. I was working with a woman yesterday on the phone, and she was having brain surgery. And she said, well, the one worry is maybe my facial nerve will be damaged. I'll have a slight paralysis on the side of my face after the operation. And she has 10 days before surgery. And so I said, it's really important, as you listen to the tape twice a day, to be imagining yourself after surgery, saying to your husband, my facial nerve is fine and functioning beautifully. And whenever that worry pops up, because it will 100 times throughout the day, to use that worry to remind you to imagine the healing imagery.
It's, in a way, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you imagine the worst, it's more likely to happen than if you imagine the best outcome possible.
Yes, and there's interesting research, Patricia, that's been done at the University of Texas in Austin showing the healing ability of a person using relaxation and visualization to speed recovery from surgery. They took a group of patients, both having the same operation. And the first group, they trained to get deeply relaxed and to visualize their surgical wound healing. The second group was the control group that just was given a quiet period while the others were visualizing their healing. And when they compared the rate of surgical wound healing, the group that had been relaxing and visualizing the healing process, actually their wounds healed much faster than the group that had not been doing that.
Well, it makes sense, because even if someone was being quiet in the quiet period, their mind could be racing with terrifying thoughts.
Exactly.
Whereas if they're given positive imagery of healing, it would set in motion all those wonderful chemical reactions that you're talking about that are healing.
And you know, our beliefs are so powerful. There was a study done that was published in the Journal of Surgery in 1988. And they took people who were having chemotherapy, and half were a control group who only got a sugar pill. And that control group, 30% of them lost their hair. Because they believed, if you have chemo, you lose your hair. That belief, all I had was a sugar pill. So it shows you the power of our beliefs.
That's extraordinary.
So we show people it's so important to take all your beliefs about your surgery and turn them into positive healing imagery.
My guest today is Peggy Huddleston, author of the book Prepare for Surgery, Heal Faster. My name is Patricia Ellsberg. You're listening to New Dimensions. Peggy, we've gone through the first two steps of preparing for surgery, relaxing and visualizing your healing. What's the next step, the third step?
The third step, Patricia, is my favorite one. It's organizing a support group, asking people to send you love, to even surround you in a pink blanket of love in that half hour that you're waiting for surgery. You and friends say, oh, you're having surgery, what can I do? Well, it's to say, my surgery's at 10 o'clock, so at 9:30, I want you to think of me and surround me in a pink blanket of love. And you can get whole prayer groups to do that, meditation groups, your group at the office. And as people are waiting, lie on the gurney waiting for surgery, they will feel this profound peace envelop them. It's utterly delicious and blissful. And there's very important research that was done at San Francisco General Hospital by Dr. Randolph Bird, documenting that, in fact, our love and our prayers can affect someone at a distance, because obviously all these people can't be with you in the holding area. Although I ask that a person have one support person with them in the holding area, not have that person left in the waiting room, but to be holding their hand, tell the hospital, as a consumer, I have a right, I know, to have someone with me in the holding area. If you just insist, they'll let you do it. In this interesting study, Dr. Bird took 393 patients who were in the cardiac care unit, really very sick people, and a computer divided them into two groups. Half were prayed for, and half were the control group, and neither the doctors nor the nurses knew who was going to be prayed for. When they compared the outcomes, the patients who had been prayed for used 5 times less antibiotics and had a survival rate, meaning living or dying, that was 3 times greater than the control group. If that was a result of a drug test, that would be the drug that would always be the drug of choice. Our ability to pray for people and surround them in love makes an enormous difference in how they feel. And it's blissful. When I'd finished writing the book, often I recall people would come to me and say, "Oh, when I felt this love around me before surgery, it was just the most delicious feeling." But I had never experienced it myself. And then I had to have minor surgery. And I found that I was terrified. And I thought it was so embarrassing because I'd written this book and I'd prepared for surgery. Here I was having made minor surgery and I was scared. So I had to use my own relaxation tape to get relaxed and ask, "What am I feeling?" And the answer came back from that intuitive knowing place. It came back, "You're feeling terror." And I said, "That's right." It's the raw terror that I was feeling. And I said, "Why?" And the intuitive answer came back, "It's not yours, it's your mother's." And instantly I knew what it was. When I'd been 14, my mother had surgery for breast cancer. And all the terror she was feeling, I absorbed like a sponge. And you know how often you will even absorb someone's emotions just to help pull them off the other person. But I never had surgery until years later when I finished this book. And that was the trigger that released this terror that had been stored in my body. And as it just released in waves, I then began to feel a peace. As I was waiting for surgery and my friends surrounded me in love, I felt this peace just surrounding me. And then I understood what all these people who had used these techniques before had said. I felt so peaceful before surgery. I then understood that peace because I was feeling it. It was sublime. And often in that deep peace, people will feel the love of people who've died. And I explained to people in the book that this may happen, so they're not surprised that it happens. But it seems to raise your vibration so people who have died can easily cross over and connect with you as you're waiting for surgery. It's a very beautiful half hour, and it's profoundly healing.
That's fascinating because I have undergone serious surgery only once in my life, and intuitively, that's the way it was for me, and it's the experience I had. My mother had died of breast cancer, and the doctors were concerned that I had potentially might have cancer, so they recommended a preventive double mastectomy, which was an extremely severe preventive measure, but it did seem right to do, and it was terrifying because I didn't know if they'd find invasive cancer or not. And I went into the hospital. I had been really, really anxious for months. It was not the kind of thing I had to decide quickly. It was an optional operation. And when I went into the hospital, my two sisters flew to be with me, and my husband was there. And we were driving into the hospital, and it was like I was surrounded with golden light. And here I had been so fearful. But the whole experience was a transcendent experience. And when I was in waiting to get the anesthetic and I guess what you call the holding room, my husband was allowed to stay, Daniel, and he was stroking my head, and I just was in bliss. And when I had the operation, when I came out of the anesthetic, they said there was less bleeding and that it was one of the most successful operations in terms of not having after effects that were detrimental. So I think I just fell into the pattern that you're describing.
You did. And getting so peaceful means the patient's going to need less anesthesia because they're already more relaxed than the patient who's absolutely terrified and you have to scrape them off the ceiling and really knock them out with a lot of anesthesia. So there's less anesthesia to come out of the body afterwards in the recovery room.
Speaking of anesthesia, have you found anesthesiologists willing to say healing statements and participate in this way?
Yes, the book has a lot of the research explaining that even though we're unconscious, we still hear everything that's being said in the operating room. And that research has been done by a lot of anesthesiologists. And so they're very supportive, and often they'll say, I always talk to my patients and tell them positive statements, and they like it when patients come in with their positive statements. The book has a page, in fact, that you actually cut out and give to your anesthesiologist at pre-ops, that meeting about a week before surgery. And then the day before surgery, I recommend that people actually telephone their anesthesiologist, because they're only assigned usually the afternoon of the day before surgery. And even to fax them the healing statements to say, these are the statements I want you to say as I'm going under the anesthesia. And research shows that these statements reduce the use of people's pain medication by 23 to 50%. And it's a dramatic difference. But a person needs to know that they have a right as a consumer to ask their anesthesiologist to say these healing statements as they're going under the anesthesia. And if the anesthesiologist is not supportive of it, where most are, then they can say, well, could you have me reassigned to someone in your department who loves to say these statements? I've been giving lectures at a number of different hospitals. These are hospitals where they're asking me to bring this method in so that all the surgical patients are trained in it. And so, of course, I lecture to the Department of Surgery and Anesthesiology. And at one hospital, it's actually Addison Gilbert Hospital in Gloucester, Massachusetts, the medical director had to have open-heart surgery at Mass General Hospital, and she was terrified. She said, I'm a physician. I know all the things that go wrong. I said, I'm terrified. So she had her anesthesiologist use the healing statements, and she used all the steps in the book to get deeply relaxed, and she listened to the tape twice a day. And after surgery, all she needed was regular strength Tylenol.
That's amazing.
And she healed a day sooner and left the hospital a day sooner. And when I talk to the departments of surgery, she also then explains her own personal experience, and their jaws drop to their knees. But it's dramatic how much less pain medication a person will need when positive healing statements are said in the OR. There's a surgeon I've worked with.
The OR is the operating room.
Good point to explain what that is. There's one surgeon I've worked with, when I told her about these healing statements that will reduce the use of pain medication following surgery, because as we're going under the anesthesia, we're highly suggestible, like in a hypnotic trance. And even if a person's going to be conscious during surgery, they're still in a very deep altered state of consciousness, a real state of alert. So the statements are highly beneficial for lessening the use of pain medication after surgery, whether you're conscious or unconscious. And this surgeon said, well, I want to be sure it's just not that I'm telling the patient that they're going to need less pain medication. That's the suggestion. But I want to see if it really works without the patient knowing I'm doing this. She said, I'm operating tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, and I'm going to say these healing statements to them and see if it lessens their use of pain medication. And she was doing abdominal hysterectomies in her practice. This was Dr. Nina Carroll at Beth Israel Hospital in Boston. It's now been renamed. These hospitals are merging so fast. It's now called Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. And she called me after 2 weeks and said, half of my patients having full abdominal hysterectomies are only using Tylenol after surgery. They're not even filling their prescription for Percocet. They're not using the morphine. And they're leaving the hospital full day early. And she said, I'm amazed. And I said, Dr. Carroll, this book is meant to be used by patients to help them change their attitudes towards surgery before. So, you know, recommend they use the book and the tape before surgery, you'll see even better results. So it's remarkable the difference in lessening use of pain medication following surgery.
Well, I can understand pretty easily that if you go into surgery relaxed, you're likely to trigger the immune system in a good way and heal faster. What I don't understand is why simply saying the healing statements, whether you're conscious or unconscious, would reduce the pain. Is there any understanding of that mechanism?
Well, what the statement is, they're saying following this operation, you will be comfortable and heal very well. So I think it's the suggestion that a person will feel comfortable. And when there's physical pain, the brain, I think, interprets it as discomfort rather than pain. And so people just experience very little pain because of the suggestion to experience very little pain. The healing statements are in the book. We also ask the patient to take the third sheet, and the first one they've given to their surgeon, the second to the anesthesiologist, and third, to actually scotch tape it to their hospital gown. So it's on their Johnny as they're rolled into surgery. And it then gives this surgeon and anesthesiologist permission to say the statements with the whole group in the operating room. So it's very permission giving. You see, medicine now is so driven by what the consumer asks for. So when a patient says, I'd like you to do this, anesthesiologists and surgeons are very glad to do this if it's a reasonable request.
So patients have a lot more power than perhaps we're used to thinking. We usually defer to the surgeon and the system.
That's right. And the book empowers the patient to be involved in their healing process. Studies are showing that the patients who ask more questions and are more demanding, who before would have been, quote, the difficult patient, they actually heal faster because they are more involved in their healing process. They're participating rather than being just passively letting it be done to them.
Is it very important to meet with the anesthesiologist and before the operation? Do you place importance on that?
Yes, that's the fifth step in actually meeting them. Sometimes you'll only be able to meet them by phone the day before surgery. You can call the Department of Anesthesiology and say, I'd like to talk to the doctor who's been, or maybe a nurse anesthetist that's been assigned to me. And talking to them on the phone creates a relationship so that you'll sleep better that night, actually feeling you've spoken to this person, that they'll say the healing statements.
Right. So I've lost the order now of the steps. So just, we've now talked the fifth step. Review the five steps in order.
All right. The first one is deep relaxation before surgery. The second is turning worries into healing imagery. The third is creating a support group to have friends surround you in a pink blanket of love. The fourth is the book has healing statements that lessen the use of pain medication that are said during surgery. And the fifth is meeting the anesthesiologist.
Right. So, and does the anesthesiologist need to say the statements too, or just the surgeon?
It's the anesthesiologist who's the best one. The surgeon's busy with the surgery. And the anesthesiologist is there present to the patient, and they love to say these statements to patients.
That makes sense. My guest is Peggy Huddleston, author of Prepare for Surgery, Heal Faster. My name is Patricia Ellsberg. You're listening to New Dimensions. Talking to Peggy Huddleston, author of Prepare for Surgery, Heal Faster. What if someone's parent is having surgery and doesn't want to have anything to do with all this hokey-pokey preparation in their minds? What can someone do to help that person?
They can still do a lot. They'd first want to get the book and read the five steps so they understand how to put them into place. And then just by asking, arranging for the anesthesiologist to say the healing statements will, in fact, dramatically lessen their parents' use of pain medication after surgery. If they can, maybe take the tape to the parents' house and get them to listen to it once. Once they feel how relaxed they get, that the parent usually says, oh, I'll listen to that. I like that. And they'll start using it once or twice a day. And then if you can talk to the parent about healing imagery, the book helps a person understand how to change their attitudes about surgery. And as they help the parent walk them through the steps, then they also can organize step three, which is getting the friends and family to surround them in love. So there's a great deal that can be done if the person is just not open to reading the book.
Well, it makes sense, too, that if they read the book and read all the research, that even the most hard-minded, doubtful person might really be more open if they actually know how much research validates this approach.
And what's interesting is that often when a person's facing surgery, someone may think their parent may not be open to it, but suddenly there's a new openness that comes with the anxiety of having surgery. I'm reminded of one man who had to have a bowel resection, a part of his bowel removed. And his wife said, using the book and tape not only helped my husband leave the hospital sooner and heal much faster, but it changed his life. And I asked her, what do you mean it changed his life? And she said, he's a statistician and a scientist. And he always made fun of me when I talked about love.
But as he listened to the relaxation tape as a way of coping with his anxiety to get peaceful before surgery and visualize his healing, she said he connected with a deep peace he'd never felt before, and it connected him then to a deep love. After surgery, he continued to listen to the tape and healed really fast. But she said now that he's healed, he listens to that tape once a day to reconnect himself to love. She said, I have a different man than I'm married to. He really feels love in his heart, and I now feel it from him too in a way I never felt it before.
It's extraordinary to think something as frightening and undesirable as surgery could be really a opportunity for a spiritual awakening.
That's what appears to happen, that out of that fear, it opens people to connecting with a deep love of their soul and that peace that then, of course, sets up the biochemistry of healing. But then they have that peace to connect to any other time in their lives.
What has been the experience of these techniques in terms of children facing surgery? Is there a way that children can use them too?
Yes, I first learned that when my own son was 10 and had to have a hernia operation. And I noticed that as long as his father and I were really peaceful about surgery, our son was really peaceful. But the minute I would start to get apprehensive about it, he would pick up that apprehension. So I had parents, and just the way I did, have to use the 5 steps to guide themselves through preparing for surgery and seeing really good positive outcomes. And then most importantly, there's something called the consent form, which has a list of all the 1,001 things that have a 1 in 1,000,000 chance of going wrong, that the doctor usually asks a parent to sign just before surgery. And it's so important to have this given to you a week before surgery, not around the child. Unfortunately, my son's surgeon read these statements out loud to him 5 minutes before surgery. My son was lying in his father's arms, really relaxed and really peaceful, and the surgeon began to read out loud from the sheet of paper the consent form, saying, well, now there'll be no risk of AIDS because he'll not need any blood transfusions. And my son's eyes got wide, wild with fear. He said, what do you mean, AIDS? And I kept saying to the surgeon, not out loud, not out loud. Let me just read it quietly and sign it. And he finally understood what I meant and gave it to me. But we had to spend a whole lot of time calming our son back down again. And so it's really important not to have those consent forms even heard by the child. They shouldn't hear that stuff. And when adults are having surgery, they should, if they're highly suggestible, maybe even have someone else read the consent form and then have them sign it. It's important. You see, the consent form is really to protect the doctor against the patient suing them. In the event something goes wrong, they can say, oh, but I told you that had a 1 in 1,000,000 chance of happening. So it's a legal protection for the doctor. It doesn't help the patient in preparing for surgery, although it's important that a person be informed of the risks of surgery. You shouldn't scare the patient to death.
Well, it seems from what you're saying, too, that it's important that the support group that you surround yourself with, whether it's one person or more people, also have a positive attitude and are not in anxiety on your behalf.
That's right. They should also be imagining the healing end result, because as they imagine your recovery process, then in fact you're going to recover much, much faster. I'm reminded of one woman who was having a total hip replacement, and I asked her, what did she want to imagine? The tape asked you to think of 3 end results. And I said, what would you like to imagine you're saying to your 8 children as you come back into your hospital room after your surgery? She said, I'd like to say to them, I'm feeling comfortable and I'm doing really well. And then she imagined them just cheering and feeling their love for their mother. And so she'd imagine that. And then the second end result, I said, what do you want to imagine as you're leaving rehab? She's supposed to be in rehab for 3 weeks. She said, I want to be walking out of there. There are no walkers for me, no other canes. I'm walking out of there under my own steam with my children around me. And I said, well, your third end result is something you're going to be doing that you love doing that means you're completely healed and fine. I said, what would that be? And she said, well, maybe I could drive myself to the shopping mall on my own because my kids have had to drive me everywhere. And then she thought a moment. I said, well, it needs to be something that really holds your passion. It's really special. And she said, then I've always wanted to go to Las Vegas on a trip. She said, I'm going to imagine I'm in Las Vegas because that means my hip is fine, and imagine I'm there on a trip with a friend. So she imagined that she only had 4 days in preparing for surgery, and she imagined each of these 3 end results. After surgery, her anesthesiologist said she was using less pain medication than any patient that ever had. When she then went to rehab, She was giving the tape to all kinds of other patients there to use because who are having trouble sleeping because she found it got her so relaxed she could easily sleep. She left rehab a week early. And her whole family, her eight children, were also picturing these same end results. So it's great to organize your family. She had a built-in healing group with having eight kids. But to get all your friends and family having the same end result in mind. Because if someone, say if someone's spouse is really nervous and anxious, you need to show them how to turn that into healing imagery so they're constantly surrounding you with that imagery, not surrounding you in fear.
Beautiful. You have a section in the book on how to reduce the side effects of chemotherapy and radiation. Could you explain how that works?
Yes. It's we have an enormous ability to lessen the side effects of chemo and radiation. And people do that by first becoming aware of what are their beliefs about the chemotherapy. Do they see it as a healing agent, or do they see it as one that's actually poisoning their bodies? I've worked with people who are having horrible reactions to chemo that feel a burning sensation in their veins and have a lot of nausea after and during the treatments. And I'd ask them, well, what do you believe? And they'd say, I only eat food that's organic. I would never put anything that's not organic in my body, and I think the chemo is toxic. So I said, you need to find some way to see it as a 100% healing agent. And as a result of that, seeing as it healing, have work out some imagery that it's healing. I was working with one woman who experienced a burning sensation as the chemo would flow into her veins. And she found a way to take that negative imagery, because she said, I think it's toxin, and see it as a healing agent. She only did that on one evening. The next day when she had her chemo, she listened to the relaxation healing tape, visualized the healing process of the chemo, cleansing her body of cancer cells, and she had no burning sensation that day. The oncology nurse from the hospital called our office ordering tapes and books for people to use in their department when they saw the difference and how much a patient can change those effects. There was one man who was having radiation, and he envisioned that huge machine that beams out the radiation. He envisioned it as the healing hand of God. You know that wonderful picture of on the Sistine Chapel of the hand of God reaching out to Adam? He saw the machine as that hand of God giving him new life in his healing. Mm. And we, as a public service, we have put on the internet this one section on how to lessen the side effects of chemotherapy that people can download for free and print out and use.
Well, it's sounding from what you say then that this book applies not just to surgery just before and just after, but that it actually applies for the long-term healing as well.
Yes. I there's an interesting example. A woman called. She was scheduled to have back surgery. She'd been flat in her back for 2 months with excruciating sciatic pain. She had two herniated discs, and she had really pinned her hopes on the surgery. And 2 days before surgery, her insurance company canceled the operation, and she was devastated. And she called my office and said, what can I do for my healing? I said, well, let me just show you on the phone some ways you can use self-healing techniques. And I said, let me show you how to talk to your back. And she said, talk to my back? What do you mean my back can't talk? I said, well, let me just show you. It's that way our intuitive voice speaks, and often we have emotions stored in parts of our body. And let me just show you how to talk to your back. And I said, shall we do that? And she said, well, okay. She said, well, I've nothing to lose. I'm just lying here and it can't hurt. So I said, just direct your awareness to your back and ask it, what is it feeling? And she was quiet for about 10 seconds. And then she said, that's right. It's filled with anger. She said, I am so mad at my back. I've been just enraged at it for having let me down. She said, I'm a house painter, and I needed to be strong to lift ladders. I have two boys I have to earn a living for to take care of. I've been flat in my back, taking painkillers every day for 2 weeks. She only could get up to go to the bathroom and eat meals, and she was in excruciating pain. And I said, well, ask your back, what healing, comforting feeling would it like you to give it? And she was very quiet, and she said, it wants love. And I asked her back how many times a day. And she said, it wants it all the time. She said, how do I do that? And I said, well, think of a person or a pet who's easy to love. And she immediately said, "When my sons were born, I held them in my arms the first time. I felt such a love." I said, "Well, just remember that scene and feel that love." And she said, "I can feel it now." I said, "Let that love flow from your heart down into your arm and fill your hand." She said, "It's in my hand." I said, "Now put your hand on your back." And as she did, she said, "Oh, there's a pulsing in my hand, and it's getting slightly warm." And then she was quiet. And then she said, "The pain is lessening in my back. It's starting to go away." And I said, you can only lie there on your back. Why can't you just continue to do this throughout the day?" She said, "That's what I'm going to do." So she learned how to stop sending rage to her back and send it love. 3 days later, she was off all of her pain medications she'd been on for 2 months. And a week later, she was up and walking. And her doctor found they could postpone surgery, and she didn't need it. But she was fine. And all the medical tests that had documented it later showed her back had healed.
It's a wonderful story. Our guest today is Peggy Huddleston, author of Prepare for Surgery, Heal Faster. My name is Patricia Ellsberg. You're listening to New Dimensions. Peggy, are there any vitamins or nutritional supplements that can speed the process of healing?
Yes, there's a whole chapter on what vitamins actually speed healing and which ones interfere with it. Doctors will tell you not to have aspirin before surgery because that interferes with the clotting. But also, interestingly enough, vitamin E also thins out your blood and makes clotting more difficult. So about 3 or 4 days before surgery, if a person's been taking vitamin E, they should stop it, because it decreases clotting. And they also think that garlic does that. So if a person is eating tons of garlic, because it's very healing, and some people eat more before surgery, about a week before surgery, they should stop all that garlic and vitamin E. And there's excellent medical research that shows that vitamin A and vitamin C tremendously speed healing. And also bromelain, which is derived from a pineapple stem, that will decrease the black and blue marks in where the surgical wound has been.
Are you training healthcare professionals or nurses to use these techniques?
Yes, often we'll get phone calls at our office of nurses who have used this going through their own surgery process, and they're so amazed at the peace they feel before surgery and how fast they're healing that they'll call up and say, "I want to learn how I can do these workshops in hospitals." So I teach workshops for healthcare professionals. It's a weekend workshop showing them how they can guide patients through these 5 steps in preparing for surgery and use them in their own hospitals.
So you're really seeding this throughout the country.
Yes.
People are having surgery, they can probably get in touch with people that are practicing and employing these techniques.
Yes, they can call our office because we now have healthcare professionals all over the country who are teaching these techniques, who they can call and just take a very simple workshop. But of course, it's set up so they can just use the book and tape without the workshop, but it's always nice to have someone hold your hand, go through it.
Well, in a few minutes, I'll have you give the number and so that people will know how to get more information. I understand that you're doing research at Harvard Medical School. Can you tell us some about that research?
Yes. Although there's research for each of the 5 steps in the book, this is the first time these 5 steps have been put together, and there's an amazing synergy that speeds healing. And so I want to document with double-blind control groups how much faster people heal with using less pain medication.
So we will be getting a lot more information about the power of this technique.
It's important to have the medical research so that surgeons can see what a difference it makes with control groups, because having that research then allows HMOs to start having their patients use it because it helps get the patient well faster. Patients are having to have shortened hospital stays, so at least if they're leaving in less time, they're leaving healed and in much better shape.
be wonderful if hospitals actually became healing institutions.
Well, there's several hospitals who have asked us to teach these workshops for all their pre-surgical patients. And it's fascinating to watch the surgeons, how open they are to it, and especially the anesthesiologists. But it's the patients who love it the most.
We're coming close to the close of the program, and I wonder, Peggy, if you feel there are implications for normal life when you're not facing surgery or facing a crisis. Do the techniques apply at all? I mean, obviously not the immediate meeting the anesthesiologist, but the general approach of relaxing and invoking positive imagery for your life?
Yes, many people will say that after they're healed, that they'll continue to listen to the tape to get deeply relaxed and to imagine a relationship healing or something in their business healing. So it's something they'll carry with them through the rest of their lives. They really contact their soul and connect with that deep peace, and then they use it in their lives.
And you were implying that there is a growing network of people that are aware of these and supportive of these processes, so it's quite likely that somebody who's facing an operation could find someone in their area to support them in this?
Yes, we have many people we can give them their names so they have that support.
Well, we have a couple of minutes left, so is there anything else you'd like to add to just close the interview?
Well, one of my hopes in writing this book was, although people would use it to prepare for surgery, that they could use the same techniques to avoid surgery.
Mm.
Often I've worked with a woman who'd have an ovarian cyst, and as she get deeply relaxed and visualize it getting smaller and smaller, and doing that for 10 days before she had surgery, when she'd go back to the hospital for an ultrasound, often they found that it completely dissolved and gone away. Now, ovarian cysts can reabsorb, and that's something that's common, but the incidence seems to be higher when people are participating in their healing process before surgery. I remember once working with a woman who had broken her ring finger. She'd been engaged, and her fiancé said he was breaking the engagement, and she broke her finger. And for 12 weeks, there was no healing in that bone. And as she was preparing for surgery, I showed her how to visualize the healing going on in her finger. And within 2 weeks, they saw new bone growth. So they postponed surgery, and in 2 more weeks, it healed.
That's a wonderful, wonderful story. Would you tell people how, we have about a minute left, how they can get in more information, how they can get the book, how they can get the tapes, how they can find out what hospitals or practitioners use these techniques?
Yes, the book is easily available in bookstores. They can also call our office at 1-800-726-4173. That's 1-800-726-4173. They can contact our website. The address is www.healfaster.com. And we're also training healthcare professionals, and people can call that same number for that information.
Our guest has been Peggy Huddleston, author of Prepare for Surgery, Heal Faster. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in San Francisco, California, USA, and is made possible by listener contributions and by the membership support of Friends of New Dimensions. If you'd like to connect with New Dimensions on the Internet, the website address is www.newdimensions.org. Executive producer is Michael Toms. Series producer is Justine Toms. Director of Affiliate Services is Jackie Dunn. Associate producers are Mel Baker and Jeff Westman. Announcers are Dan Drayson and Alexandra McIntyre. Administrative and editorial staff include Tom Greenaway, Rose Holland, David Hall Stevens, and Debbie Pollack. My name is Patricia Ellsberg. On behalf of the New Dimensions radio staff and all those who are members of Friends of New Dimensions and members of our affiliated stations, I'm wishing you well. This is program number 2621.
Distribution of New Dimensions is made possible in part by the Institute of Noetic Sciences, a worldwide membership organization based in the San Francisco Bay Area that seeks to understand changing perceptions about science and spirituality. At 1-800-383-1394.
For information about other New Dimensions radio programs, selected interviews in book form, and how you can support the work of New Dimensions, or for a free copy of the New Dimensions Journal, write New Dimensions Radio, Department K, Post Office Box 569, Ukiah, that's U-K-I-A-H, California, 95482, USA. That's New Dimensions Radio, Department K, Post Office Box 569, Ukiah, California, 95482, USA. To order a cassette tape of today's program using Visa or MasterCard, call 1-800-388-8273. That's 1-800-388-TAPE. And please specify the guest or program number. Join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.